Hi, everybody. The George Wilder Jr. Hi, everybody. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
Freedom. This is what I call freedom.
Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, everybody. Okay. All right. Thanks. Anyway, thanks, everybody. We're back on the air. We've got a full week. We've got great guests. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, WTTTY. Station numbers? Okay, not witty, but station numbers. And welcome to the city of Chicago. It's a beautiful day. I hope it's great where you are, and I hope you had a great weekend, a great week, period. I mean, beautiful. We were off for... 4 days. Yeah. Thursday, we were supposed to be on the air, but we wind up canceling the show due to, errands, things having to be done. And I have to happen to be there, if I said that correctly. Anyway, things, I was off Thursday because I had things to do, put it that way. All right. And plus I think it was a storm and knocked some of the computers out. Yeah, it was a storm. Knocked some of the computers out. And then, you know, when it rains and it storms and lightning, you know, things go wrong with the computer. So if you hear any kind of interruptions or cracking or breaking in this episode of this show, then you'll probably know that it's probably due to the storm passed, you know. So, and a lot of times the workers come out, the electricians and people out on the street, they start working on the light poles, electricity poles out here in the street. If I said that correctly, I don't know anything about it. But anyway, we were off for 4 days. But one day, we're actually on 4 days a week, folks. We do 4 days a week. We go from Monday through Thursday. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we're off. And but this Thursday, last Thursday, we couldn't do it because of the storms. Let me put it that way, if I can say that correctly. But anyway, the George Wilder Jr. Show is back on the air. Glad to be here, folks. Really glad to be here. It's another great day in the city of Chicago. As I've spoken, I hope it's the same where you are. And just having a great time, day, just being alive. It's all about just being alive, folks, especially if you're in Chicago and you're in some other place, state, city, town, anywhere around the world. If you are experiencing great weather, get out there and enjoy it. I mean, you really got to enjoy it because winter is coming. And it's going to get here before you know it. So at least you want to say that, wow. Winter is here and it's cold as hell, but at least I enjoyed summer. In other words, don't let this summer get away from you without enjoying it, without being outside, without taking some sort of taking your right place in it, because it may never come again. Tomorrow, next week, the next hour is promised to no one. So there's no doubt about it. If you enjoy life, put it that way. I'm getting stuck here, but enjoy life, you know, and because it's too short. It is too short, and things are not promised to you at all. Tomorrow is not promised to you. Even the next 30 minutes is not promised to you, because people die off every day without enjoying at least some of the life that they have lived. You know, so enjoy life. You know, don't press. Don't be lonely. These things can kill you. Yeah, loneliness kills. And there are so many people in the United States, 45 and over, they live alone by themselves. And this is a killer. It's just like depression. I mean, if you're lonely, you're gonna be like depressed. Depressed and loneliness goes hand in hand. So loneliness does kill, and there's no doubt about it. I knew that long before they were, you know, talking about it on the nightly news. I knew it long before that loneliness kills. Being by yourself all the time, wanting to be by yourself all the time, refusing to have friends, refusing to be happy is an illness. Everybody wants to be happy. Everybody should be happy. Nobody should feel worthless or I'm too ugly and nobody likes me. Nobody should feel like that. I'm too old and everybody wants to abuse me because I'm old, or I'm too old and I'm going to die. And people are telling me that every day. Or I don't have any talent. Everybody tells me I don't have any talent. If they tell me I don't have any talent, I must don't have any talent. And you know, that things like that, you know, if you got people around you saying those kind of awful things, then those people are the kind of people you don't need to be around. Those people are the kind of people you should divorce. I mean, you get rid of people who are wishing you the best, wishing you the worst, hoping you flop, hoping you fail, wishing you to fail, telling you you're going to fail, telling you you are a failure, helping to make you a failure. You want to get away from those kinds of people because they are out there and they are out there in droves. If they see you trying to make something of yourself, if they see you trying to lift yourself up out of the gutter, they're going to make sure you stay there. Are they going to try to make sure you stay there? So you don't need to be around people who are not supportive of what you are trying to do that's positive for your life. You don't need that. Believe me, you don't need that. Because that's, if you hung around, if you, you know, have people around you that are that way, then you're going to, they are the ones who are going to put you in a depression. And that's what they want you. They want you to be depressed. You know, most people who are trying to stop you from being the best that you can be, majority of these kinds of people aren't nothing themselves. So they feel, well, I'm nothing, so I don't want you to be nothing. You know, and you have to get away from those kinds of people. They're out there. Then you have people who try to play on your heartstrings. If they know that you're caring, you care about this, you care about that, you're this kind of person, you're very nice, you're very humble, you're very giving, you're very loving. People would prey on those kinds of emotions that's in you. Well, George is very nice. He's very kind. He's very this. He's very caring. Let's go see if we can con him a little bit. You know, that happens. People will try to con you because you're just nice. You're nice. You're giving. You're friendly. And people, once they find that out, once they get a whiff of that, they're coming after you. Oh, she's nice. She's very nice. She's friendly. She's loving. She's giving. You know, she wants the world. She wants to make the world a better place. Let's see if we can't go con her out of some money. You know, you've got those kind of people out there. So if you're out there and you want to make something of yourself and you want to be more than what you are, make sure you put the right kind of people in your corner. The right kind of people, you know, do not go out here and grab anybody because they say they support you because they may not. And a lot of this kind of thing that I just got through talking about can happen in your own family, can happen even with your closest friends. I mean, you may have some friend that may constantly attach themselves to you and, you know, just to bring you down, just to keep you from making it, just to keep you, you know, below standards. And when you're trying to make something out of yourself and these people are standing in your way, you just have to, you know, you have to be strong. You have to be strong and you have to be a fighter or these people are going to win. You got to be strong enough to say, hey, you're not going to stop me from bettering myself. You're not going to stop me from doing the things that I love. You're not going to stop me from my own happiness, because they will. They will try. I'm pretty sure some of you out there have already probably experienced these kinds of things. And some of you haven't. But at least the George Wilder Jr. Show is bringing it up. And it's something maybe you have just learned because, you know, there's nothing wrong with learning something. We all learn something every day, all the time. And I love learning stuff because I've always been one who wanted to absorb knowledge because I always wanted to know things. I mean, you got people out here. They don't want to know a damn thing. They don't want to know nothing. I don't care. The hell with it. I don't give a F. You know, you can be, for real, I ran into a few people who just don't care. They don't care about what's going on in the world. They don't care about their own life, their own future, but you care about yourself. And those kinds of people who don't give a damn about anything, not even about their own future, believe me, if you're in contact with them and they know you and they know you trying to make something of yourself, those people will try to keep you back, hold you back, keep you down. Any way they can, they will lie on you to other people. They will say nasty things about you to other people. That's not true, because they want everybody to think that you're nothing. They want everybody to think that you are the scum of the earth. They want everybody to think that you will not make it in your life. You know, you got to get away from those kinds of people. The kinds of people who will lie on you just to get others not to like you, or just to get others to start talking about you in a negative way. So you have to get those kinds of people out of your life, or they will win. They will ruin you if you let them, if you're not able to just pack up and leave, you know. But a lot of us aren't able to pack up and leave, and sometimes we don't have the support that we need to get out there on our own to try to get away from these type of people. But you're going to have to, because if you stay around people who don't support you, if you stay around people who are mean and nasty and just don't want to see you get any place, then you will not get any place. You got to find a way to get away and show these people. And once you get away from these kinds of people, show them that they can't stop you from being what you want to be. If you have talent, great talent, and you know that your talent is in need out there, then there is nothing that's going to stop you from being the best that you can be. Don't even friends, your family, if they're not supportive, do not let any of these people tell you what you can't do, tell you you're not good enough for something, you know, because I've told my kids, I've told my son, I said, don't ever let anybody tell you what you can't do, because, you know, a lot of bullies are in school and bullies will tell you in a minute that you ain't nothing, you know, and a lot of kids believe that. They will believe that what a bully tell them, you ain't nothing, you know. And they're already talking about how kids commit suicide online, you know, and they do because of bullying online, bullying on the internet, bullying at school. And some kids are just susceptible to this kind of thing, but they have to be strong. And you have to realize a bully is nothing but a coward, nothing but a coward. No one in their right mind should pay attention to a bully. They're nothing but cowards. Because if you confront a bully, you knock them out, they will leave you alone. I mean, when I was going to school, when I was a kid in grammar school, yeah, I had a bully. I mean, he was after me every day. But one day I fought back. And this is a true story. One day I fought back. And when I did fight back, we became best friends. We truly did. We became best friends. I would go over his house. He'd come over my house. We'd go out to hang out. You know, we became best friends. I had knocked the hell out of him. After I knocked the hell out of him, we became best friends. That's one of the things you have to do to a bully. You got to stand up to a bully. If you don't, they're going to keep coming after you. And every time they come after you, it's just going to get a lot worse. Well, anyway, let's get back to loneliness. Loneliness is a serious problem. You know, there's a lot of people over the age of 45, even some seniors. I mean, you after so long, you live for so long, you lose your wife, you lose your spouse, you maybe lose some of your kids, and then you wind up alone in your apartment or your home or even a nursing home. And that's bad. Loneliness will kill you. I mean, it's a medical condition just like depression. No one in their right mind should be alone. I mean, If you don't have family, find a way to adopt a pet. Get a puppy, get you a dog or something. And that's, I don't mean that in a facetious way. I mean it seriously, because pets have known to prolong the lives of people in their 80s and their 90s, and even in their hundreds. So it's a great thing to adopt a pet, you know, or try to get a family member to stay with you. And a lot of older people, they grow old, they move in with their siblings, sisters and brothers, and they all stay there together. You know, no one really needs to be alone. And I don't know, I don't understand why someone would want to be alone. It just doesn't compute. I mean, yours truly. I mean, I have lived alone. I have been alone. I never liked it. I mean, I didn't. I hated it. I couldn't stand it. You know, regardless of what they were saying, I just didn't like it. You know, I'd rather consider myself a people person, and I love being around people. So I never thought about being alone or by myself. I didn't like it. But there's a lot of people out here who enjoy being alone. They want to be alone. And if you try to make friends with them, they'll bite you. Wow, get away from me, you know. And then you then you say, oh, okay, all right. If you want to be alone, be alone. But it takes years off your life. You will die a lot sooner alone. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this is in the medical books, folks. It's not just George on the George Wilder Jr. Show sprouting this. This is true. And any doctor, any psychologist will tell you that loneliness is a killer. Some people say it kills more people than cancer or diabetes. And I can believe that. You know, I mean, what is it for somebody to sit in a room by themselves for days, weeks, months, and even years with nobody to talk to, with nowhere to go? You know, refusing to get up and get out and exercise. And that's another thing. I think lonely people, not all, but they lack, you know, general exercise. And you need exercise to get your blood going and get your heart going so you don't have a heart attack or a stroke. You know, exercise will help reduce all of that. And loneliness, I mean, people sitting around the house or around their apartment, looking out the window, looking at everybody else enjoying life. There's nothing to stop you from enjoying life. Loneliness, depression are killers. I don't care how many prescriptions your doctor can write for this cause, for this illness. Illness. It ain't gonna work. What's gonna work is for you to get yourself some kind of companionship, a dog. A small dog, a cat or something. There are so many elderly people out here and young people, elderly and young people walking their dogs. And their pet is the only thing that they have. Now, to adopt a pet, yeah, there's an adoption fee, but sometimes the adoption fees can be waived. You can go get yourself a pet from any one of these pet stores that offer this kind of thing, especially Paws and or Adopt a Pet or Clear the Shelters kind of thing. Go get yourself a pet if you don't have family members that you can live with and stay with. And when I say pet or a dog, I don't mean it in a facetious way. I mean it in a way that it prolongs your life, so you don't live alone. You don't be alone. There's nothing like taking your pet outside and walking your dog and getting yourself some exercise also while doing that. That's a great thing. You know, that's a great thing. So don't sit around being lonely and depressed. And I say this almost every day now. Don't ever feel worthless. You're not worthless. Nobody's worthless. Nobody's put on this earth to be worthless. If you think you're worthless, then a lot of other people are going to say you are worthless. See, whatever you think of yourself, that's how other people are going to see you. If you see yourself as worthless, other people are going to see you as worthless also. Do you want other people to see you as worthless? Of course not. Are you worthless? No. And don't ever let anybody tell you that you're worthless. If you let people tell you that you're worthless and you start to believe it, then you may actually become worthless. No one is worthless. I don't care if you got $1 million or if you haven't got a cent. No one is worthless. And don't ever let anybody, your husband, your boyfriend, your friends online, your enemies, don't let anybody ever tell you that you're worthless. You are not worthless. Nobody is worthless. I actually think if you were worthless, if you were actually worthless, you wouldn't be here on earth. Because I believe everybody on earth, in the world, everybody has a talent. However, a lot of people do not reach down inside themselves to pull up that talent and utilize it. If you have a talent and you don't utilize it, whose fault is that? That's your fault. So if you have a talent, if you can do something great, if you can do something wonderful or something that no one else can do, if you have a gift for doing something, you're not worthless. I don't care how old you are. You can be 80 years old. You can be 90. You can be 190. I mean, how many people out here are running marathons, 80 and 85 years old, running marathons? They don't have that. Oh, my knees are hurt. Oh, my back. Oh, it's my shoulder. They don't have all of that going on. And they're 85 and 90 years old, and they're running marathons. And there you are, 45, and you're crying about pain in your knees or your upper back is going out. Oh, my back just went out. If those kinds of things that are happening, it means that you've done something wrong when you were younger or something or other, or you're faking it. Or usually a lot of people have pain because the lack of exercise and the lack of nutrition. That is what causes your pain, is the lack of exercise and the lack of proper dieting. That's what causes it. Oh, George, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. It is. Your doctor might, you know, a lot of times your doctor won't tell you what's really wrong with you. You know why? Because they don't want to. They don't want to give you the needed advice to find out what is really ailing you. They may, if they tell you something, most of them are probably reluctant to do so. But doctors are always going to try to hold something back, keep something from you about the disease or the medical condition that you have. Why? Because it's a profitable industry. They're not going to tell you that there's a cure for diabetes. Do you think your doctor's going to tell you that? No. They're not going to tell you that there's a cure for lung cancer and heart disease. They're not going to tell you any of that. Why? Because they know if they cure you of your diseases, you will not be back at the doctor. And therefore, if you don't come back to the doctor, they can't charge you. The medical industry. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying do not listen to your doctor. Basically, what I'm saying is follow up on whatever condition you have. Learn as much about the disease that you have. So when your doctor fails to tell you some things about your sickness, you'll already know. You can find out for yourself, because a lot of doctors will tell you only what they want you to know, not what you should know. I mean, because the medical industry is a profitable one. It's about making money. If they cured cancer, you would never need a doctor. If they cured diabetes, you would never need a doctor. If they cured heart disease and MLS, a lot of these diseases can be cured. And the doctors and the medical industry in the United States and all over the world, they know this. They know this. But they're not going to tell you, because they want your money. Oh, George, thank you for coming into the doctor to see the doctor today. Can we write your prescription? Can we send you to a specialist? All of that's going to cost money. Oh, let me take your blood pressure. That'll be $90 million, George. Yeah, I mean, it's all profitable. I'm not saying anything bad about doctors, because they're just doing what they're doing because they have to make a living too, okay? They have to make a living, and they're making a living off your insurance, off your dollars, you know? And yeah, you walk into a doctor's office, they're never gonna tell you. I mean, every time you walk into a doctor's office, you're not gonna be walking out of there without an appointment. I mean, you're gonna have appointments for the rest of your life. That's what a doctor told me. Well, George, you're gonna be having appointments for the rest of your life. And I know damn well I don't need appointments for the rest of my life. That's because every appointment, they're getting thousands and thousands of dollars out of me. That's why they keep me coming. The medical industry is a profitable one. And it's going to continue to be profitable as long as we don't get some Democrats, independents in Congress in Washington. It's a shame the way people in the United States are bullied and tossed around by their legislators in Congress. There's no way in the world healthcare in the United States should cause someone to lose their car, lose their house, lose all of their money in the bank, to the point where they become destituted. I mean, this happens all the time. Someone gets a deadly, incurable terminal disease or something, and it just wipes the family out financially. That's wrong. That is totally, totally wrong for someone to for industry like the medical industry cause so many people heartbreak and heartache, and still they do not solve the problem of the disease because you don't have no money, or you have exhausted all of your funds trying to fight the disease. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Wow, 6:34. I've been running my mouth, right? 6:34 on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for listening. I sure do appreciate it. And like I've said, we've been off for 4 days. One day, Friday, I believe, last Friday, it was storming, raining, and I just didn't want to go on the air then, and because I didn't want to take a chance on my equipment being disrupted by the storms, and my guests would be interrupted also, you know, by these things. And I want to apologize to anybody who has been listening to the show and there's cracks things like that. That you've been hearing on the show, cracks, breaks, or something like that in the audio. I want to apologize for that. It could be the equipment. I probably need new equipment. I've been having this stuff for about 3 years, so we're going to have to try to upgrade it a little bit more for the George Wilder Jr. Show. What is this popping up here? Okay, I'm trying to get rid of some pop-ups, folks. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. What's in the news today? I know it's Donald Trump. All right, you can follow me on Facebook. Follow me on right here, Blog Talk Radio. Click like, click follow, whatever. And follow me, LinkedIn. Okay. But you know, the two most popular websites are Facebook and Twitter. I can't speak for, and I think third is probably LinkedIn. You know, but all the rest of them, I think, are just totally irrelevant. Who isn't on Facebook? You know, who isn't on Facebook? And who will not be on Facebook? That's the thing. That is the thing.
Making the world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. All right.
If you would like your product, service, or your book to be mentioned on the George Wilder Jr. Show twice a day, 4 days a week, right here on the George Wilder Jr. Show, just email the show or email its host for more details. Thank you.
That the diabetes, they tell you, is a chronic disease. And so this is what happens, and this is what happens in all studies, and if you've taken medications, you know this is what happens. So your sugars start out actually not bad. As you take the medications, the sugars actually comes down a bit. But over the years, it kind of, the effect sort of wears off. So then you wind up having to add more and more and more medications. So what happens is that no matter what drug you take, so these compare three drugs, metformin, glibride, and rosiglitazone. So no matter what drug you take, the initial effect is very good, up to about 6 months. And then after about 6 months, the effect kind of wears off, and you can see that the sugar slowly goes up. And so what happens is that you wind up on a second medication or a third medication. And this is pretty well what happens to everybody. So if you've had diabetes for a while, and many people have had it for 10, you know, 12, 15 years, what you find is that you start off on metformin, then you go to metformin and glibride, then maybe three agents or four agents, then you wind up on a little bit of insulin, then you wind up on more insulin and more insulin. And if you think about the diabetes, if you think about who has, you know, mild diabetes and who has severe diabetes, you can see that the people who are just on the little bit of metformin are, you know, have mild diabetes, and if you're on a lot of insulin, you have very severe diabetes. So in fact, over these years, despite what everybody tells you, your diabetes is just getting worse and worse and worse. So your sugars might go up, they might go down, but your diabetes is actually getting worse. And I think that's what confuses people a lot, because they think that the sugar and the diabetes are the same thing, but they're actually not. But over that period of time, you can see that no matter what, it's actually progressing. And they say it's a progressive disease. So this is the thing that you have to understand, that the sugars and the diabetes are actually two different things. So diabetes, the real heart of diabetes is the insulin resistance, okay? So that part is what's getting worse. The sugars is really just a symptom of the insulin resistance. okay? But it's not the actual diabetes. The actual diabetes is the resistance to insulin and the subsequent very high levels of insulin. If you want to think about it, you know, in the analogy, you can think about an infection. So if you have an infection, so you have a big, you know, infection in the lungs or whatever, that's the actual disease. The symptom is the fever, okay? So what you have to do is treat the disease, which is the infection, with antibiotics. You can't treat the symptom of the fever. So if you have a very bad infection, you need antibiotics. You don't need more and more Tylenol. So diabetes is the same thing. The disease is about insulin resistance, but the symptom is the high blood sugar. And yet all our treatment is directed against the high blood sugar. So you can see that controlling the high blood sugars actually doesn't do anything for you, because you're not actually treating the disease. The disease actually continues to progress. And that's the real problem. So up to about 5 years ago, we thought that treating the sugars would make you better, right? And this is what probably all of you have heard. Your sugars are doing fine, your sugars are doing fine. So if you think that the sugars is the same thing as the diabetes, then you'd think that the diabetes is doing fine. But it turns out about 5 years ago that they did three very large studies. And what they found was that no matter if your sugars were well controlled or poorly controlled, it actually didn't make any difference. You still got complications of diabetes, you still got the disease, you know, the heart disease, the strokes, you got the, you know, the eye disease, the kidney disease, all of it. So none of that was made better by controlling the sugars. And if you think about it this way, you can see why. Because you're not actually treating the disease. You're only treating the symptoms. So just like if you take Tylenol for an infection, it might make you look better, but it doesn't actually make you better. So this is the same thing. So the diabetes is the insulin resistance. So you have to understand what is the cause of the insulin resistance, and then you actually have to treat it. So you have to treat the insulin resistance and not the sugars. Now, at a certain point when your sugars are very high, yes, you have to treat it. But that's not what is really important in the disease. The real part of the heart of the disease is the insulin resistance. And because they don't really understand what causes the insulin resistance, they can't actually treat it. So all your treatments, all the metformin, all the glyburide, all the insulin, all of that is aimed at simply treating the sugars. So here's the real question: what causes the insulin resistance? And this is what's happening in the body. This is just a cartoon. So normally the insulin causes you to lower the blood sugars. That's what it does. As you eat, you know, your blood sugars go up and insulin is released to take that sugar out of the blood and into the tissues. And that's a normal thing. When you develop insulin resistance, it's the insulin doesn't seem to work as well. So what happens is that the body kind of pumps up the levels of insulin to make it work well enough to get your sugars out of the way. But the high insulin level is a result of the insulin resistance. But what causes the insulin resistance in the first place? And that's really what you need to understand in order to treat it. Because if you know what causes the insulin resistance, then you can treat it. And it turns out that it's actually the insulin that causes the insulin resistance. And that might seem funny at first, but in fact, that's what happens in most biological systems. So if you look at any other hormone, if you get exposed to it, your body develops resistance to it. So if you look at addictive drugs or alcohol or anything, or smoking or anything, as you take the first one, say for instance marijuana or cocaine or one of these addictive drugs, or you can take Valium or any of these antipsychotics and stuff, as you take the first one, you get a real high, but every subsequent one is a little bit lower. So you wind up having to take higher and higher doses to get the same effect. And that's really resistance or tolerance. And it happens for all drugs. Insulin is exactly the same. As you take more and more insulin, your body develops more and more resistance to it. And now you see that it's actually a real vicious cycle, because what happens is that if your insulin level is high, then you get some insulin resistance. As you get insulin resistance, you get higher insulin levels. As you get higher insulin levels, you get higher resistance, and it goes round and round. So you have a vicious circle. And in fact, treatment with insulin now is not simply not effective. It's actually making things worse, because you're feeding into that cycle. So while the insulin lowers your sugars, it is actually raising your insulin resistance. So in fact, it's making things worse. You're getting more diabetes by taking the insulin. And that's the real problem. When you understand the actual disease, you can see why current standard treatment is actually not only not effective, it's actually really, really, really bad for you. Because you're treating the exact, what is actually causing the disease is what you're treating it with. That's never going to work, right? It's just not going to work. So if you think about it, the problem is that the insulin level is too high. So you're not going to make things better by taking more insulin. It's like treating an alcoholic with alcohol, right? This is exactly the same thing. So the same thing happens in alcohol. If you take alcohol, the first one you get, you know, a real buzz, and then every subsequent one is a little lower. And what happens is that if you take the alcohol, your symptom, you feel a little bit better. But you're not making the alcoholism any better, right? This is the exact same thing. The problem is that your insulin levels are too high. So how can taking more insulin possibly be good for you? And the truth is that it wasn't. It was never good for you. In fact, it made things worse. But people didn't really understand that. And because they didn't understand that, they then made an excuse for themselves by saying that this is a chronic progressive disease. But the truth is that diabetes was not a chronic progressive disease, because we know that we can cure it in many cases. So if you do weight loss surgery or gastric banding or bariatric surgery, basically if you staple somebody's stomach, their diabetes goes away in like 90% of cases. So this was not a chronic progressive disease, this is a curable disease. So if you say that this is a curable disease, yet our treatment is making people worse, the only logical conclusion is that our treatment is completely incorrect. And that's exactly what it is. So when you're thinking about treatment of diabetes, there's a few things you have to consider. One, you have to understand that the key to treating diabetes is not to take more insulin. That makes things worse. The key is, how are you going to get those insulin levels really low? The second thing is that diabetes is a dietary disease, okay? Almost for sure it's a dietary disease. We know that. Yet, if it's a dietary disease, the cure is going to have to be dietary. You can't take a dietary disease and treat it with drugs and pretend that that's going to make things better. But yet that's what we've done. We've taken a disease which is dietary in nature, and we've prescribed you drugs that suppress the symptoms. It's not going to make it better, and it hasn't. The last 30 years has borne it out. The third thing is that this is not a chronic progressive disease at all. This is in fact a curable disease, but you have to treat it the right way. You have to understand what you're doing. So one of the things we do in our clinic is that we are looking at ways of how to lower the insulin levels. And that's the real thing. And one of the simpler ways to do it is intermittent fasting. And that's why we have a lot of people on these sort of protocols. And one of the things to remember is that fasting has been done for many, many years. You know, everybody thinks that it's so crazy. Everybody hears about it at first and thinks it's crazy. But you have to remember that fasting has been done for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And not only that, but almost every single major religion in the world has periods of fasting that are prescribed. Not because, you know, of any particular reason, but they recognize that it is actually a very healthy thing for people to be doing every so often. And why is it so healthy? Because what happens is that when you fast, your insulin levels go down very low. Because you're not eating, your insulin levels go down. And having periods where your insulin level is down helps prevent that vicious cycle, right? It's the insulin that leads to the resistance, which leads to higher insulin. It's a vicious cycle. So if every once in a while, you know, you do Ramadan, which is a month of fasting, or you do, you know, the 40 days of Lent, or whatever it is you do, if you have a period now where your insulin level is very low, you're going to completely break that vicious cycle. And if you do that routinely through the year, then you will stay healthy. You will prevent the development of that resistance. If you don't get the resistance, you don't get the high levels. And that's what we do. So I'm going to show you here what we do kind of in a demonstration. So what we do in terms of the sugars, you can think about it this way. The body actually has the ability to store energy in two ways. So when you eat, you're taking in energy as food, right? So you can store that in two ways. You can store sugar and you can store fat. Okay, so sugar is stored in the liver as something called glycogen. And there's a limited amount of glycogen that you can store in the liver, but it's readily available. Okay, so it's kind of like a short-term storage, but you can store sugar. If you store more energy than fat, the body will actually turn that into fat, and that's kind of long-term food energy storage, right? So as long as you're eating, you're going to be burning that off. You're going to be increasing insulin, and insulin is going to tell your body to store some of that away, okay? So if you have too much sugar, what happens is that some of that is going to go into the stores. But as long as your stores are not full, it's not going to spill over into the blood. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to demonstrate it this way. Normally, as you take a little thing to eat, if you don't have filled up stores of sugar, what's going to happen is that you're going to fill it up a little bit, right? But it's fine. As you don't eat, so for instance, you eat dinner, you take in more calories than you can really use for that period of time. So your body produces insulin, and insulin says to the body, okay, well, I've eaten a big meal. I'll use a little bit of that as energy. The rest I'm going to put in storage as sugar, okay, because that's what I do. So it fills up the storage, but the storage is empty, so it's fine. Then you go to sleep, so for the next 9, 12 hours, you're not eating. So what happens is that your body is going to take that and it's going to burn it off as energy. So that's fine. That's the normal situation. Now what happens in the diabetic situation is something like this. So over time, your storage is, empty. But over time, as you kind of continue to eat more and more, what happens is that that storage kind of gets filled up. And now here's the situation in diabetes. This is your storage levels of sugar, right? They're completely full, right? And what you do when you eat is this. You're going to take in a meal, and you're going to have more sugar. And what's going to happen? It's all going to spill over into the blood, right? So the blood sugar levels go up. There's nothing it can do. It can't store anymore. So for a while, your body can compensate. But what does insulin do? So now you're diabetic, and this is what happens every mealtime. Your storage is filled up. Every time you eat, the sugar spills out into the blood. Well, as you take insulin to take care of that problem, the body is going to take that excess sugar and force it back into the body.
It does.
So what happens to that? Your body is just going to store it as fat. In other words, the insulin is going to make you gain weight. And if you've ever taken insulin, you know already that's exactly what happens. But this is the problem. If you continue to do this day after day, year after year, all you do is gain weight, right? But it doesn't make you any better because all that sugar is still in your body. So it's kind of like that show Hoarders. I don't know if you've seen it, but people, hoard too much stuff and their house is full of stuff. So pretty soon the stuff flows out. And what happens? If you're taking insulin, all you're doing is taking all that garbage and shoving it back into the house. Well, that's not going to help. That's not going to make things better. In fact, over time, it's just going to make things worse. And that's exactly what happens in the current treatment of diabetes. So this is what we do instead. If your cup is completely full, the only rational treatment for diabetes, so this is the situation now in diabetes, your cup is completely full. The only way that's going to make you better is to start draining it off. So that's what you do. So as you fast, what happens? A little bit of this water is going to come out and it's going to get burned off. The next time you fast, a little bit more of this water is going to come and it's going to get drained off. Every single time you do it. So when you eat, it will fill back up a little bit, right? But as you go, what's going to happen is eventually your stores are going to come down and it won't be it won't spill over into the blood. You're basically just forcing the body to burn off that sugar. But as you do, you reduce the stores of sugar and you get better. Your diabetes gets better because now you're burning it off. It's like that guy in Hoarders. Instead of shoving it back into your house, which is what the insulin does, we're just going to throw it out. And really, that's really the reason that we do this. You have to lower insulin levels, but you got to get rid of that sugar. Okay? You've stored up too much. And it hasn't been stored up over like a month. It's been stored up over like 10 years, right? So the thing is that it's not going to reverse in a week or a month or 2 months even. Yes, if you do fasting every day, it will reverse faster, right? Because you're getting rid of that sugar every day. So this is what we do. And a few patients actually have been kind enough to share their stories with us. But I'll present a few other cases because we've had, you know, quite a number of people go through the program. So I'll just share their stories with you quickly because really it illustrates really how powerful this new concept is. So the first case we have is Richard, who's here today. And so he's had diabetes for about 10 years now, and he's had a few complications, including some kidney disease, which is why he was here in this office. And he saw a colleague of mine, Dr. Ting, and so he was referred into the Intensive Dietary Management Program, and we started him in June of 2013. And we started him with a fasting regimen as opposed to the amount of insulin that he had. So this is Richard and his wife. Oh, I can't see that very well. And this is what's happened to his weight. So his weight, starting just above 250, has been steadily coming down. And it's down to 210. His waist size has continued to come down. And his hemoglobin A1C, which is the measure of his sugars, has stayed relatively stable, below 7%. And this is him now. So if you look at what has happened to his insulin dose, so he started off with 55 units of insulin. And within, 6 weeks, he was off of all his insulin. In other words, his sugars are doing fine, and he's off of all his medications completely. And his levels of A1C are no longer at a level where you could make the case that he is diabetic. In other words, you could say that his diabetes has been cured. By using these kind of simple understanding of diabetes, you can see that this is actually the rational but also the natural way to cure diabetes. We're not talking about piling on more drugs for you. I mean, you go.
See, folks, there is a cure for diabetes. There's a cure for every damn disease out there, but the medical industry is such a profitable industry that they don't want you to know. And there is a cure for cancer, but you may not be rich enough for the cure. I mean, if you're rich and you're famous and they can get this stuff early, or even if it's progressed, I mean, you think about it, folks, 40, 50, 60 years or more, people have been getting cancer. And you mean to tell me in these 40, 50, 60 years or 100 years, people have been getting cancer, that these folks, these medical folks, this medical industry, these folks, they don't have a cure for cancer? Give me a break. It's a total cure. The fact is that this stuff is profitable. That's the reason why you will never hear. It'll never be here unless, it's free. I mean, I actually think going to a doctor should be free. A lot of politicians, especially independents and Democrats, are saying that they're talking single payer. Of course, folks, this stuff should be free. There's no way in hell that you should be paying and losing your house, losing your car, losing everything you own because of medical bills. It just doesn't make sense. And it's unfair because there's so many countries around the world, they do not charge anything to go see a doctor. You just walk in to see a doctor, and he treats your ailments, maybe give you a prescription for a drug or so, and you don't have to pay anything. But not in the United States. They got to rob you blind for this. You know, they've got to, it doesn't make sense. Republicans, they want to throw people, millions of people off their health care. And people who can afford it and people who can barely afford it, it's going to be hit. And it's just horrible at what's happening with healthcare in the United States. We should be the leader of the world when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to taking care of our citizens, when it comes to welcoming immigrants from other countries. You know, because, you know, I mean, we should be a leader in that effort, but we're not. Actually, we've fallen a few feet down. We've lost a lot of status in the world because of Donald Trump. But still in all, you know, we should be, and we are a great country. America will always be great. We may have assholes like Donald Trump. We may have assholes like the Republicans in Congress, but America will always be a great country. It will always be that. You know why? Because the people of this great country, America, the United States, we're going to make sure it stays as great as it should be, or as great as we want it to be. And we love this country. We're not going to let some clowns, some liars, a clown, a con man, destroy everything that we love and built. We do love this country. And we're going, what are they talking about? We do love this country. We do love this country. Okay, I was thrown off a little bit, folks. I want to talk about Mayor Rahm Emanuel. You may have heard this in the news. Mayor Rahm Emanuel has sued the federal government, the Department of Justice, Jeff Sessions, Donald Trump, because they are threatening to hold money from sanctuary cities. The federal government feels that a lot of these sanctuary cities are protecting criminals. And they want to get in here and deport and lock these people up and get these people out of the country. But Mayor Rahm Emanuel of Chicago is saying, no, that's not going to happen. We need money for police cars. We need money for this. We need money for that. Give me a break. I mean, I'm not a Trump fan. I'm surely not a Jeff Sessions fan. I think these people are idiots, don't know what they're doing. But with this, they may have a point. You know, I mean, and they may have a point because they put some information up on the board that says, hey, wow, in 2016, Chicago has more crime than New York and Los Angeles and a lot of other cities put together. And why don't Chicago want to cooperate and get the criminals out of the city of Chicago? Criminals, they can't seem to catch. I mean, you got a lot of people, a lot of criminals out here walking the streets who should be in jail. They've done a lot of dirt. They've shot people, but they're still walking the streets. So they have a point when it comes to Chicago's crime. There's no doubt about it. It's statistically in the books that 2017 is a lot. The homicides have increased from 2017 from 2016. That's somehow Eddie Johnson and his police department under Rahm Emanuel, the mayor, these guys are not cutting it. Crime has just spiked like your blood sugar if you have diabetes. Crime has just spiked out of control, and these people have no answer for it. They don't know what to say about crime, and they're getting paid to stop the violence. They're getting paid to make sure that Chicagoans on the south and west sides of the city, north side, east side, are not killed when they're walking down the street. But this is not happening. They are not solving crimes. I'm not saying that illegals immigrants are committing the crimes, but all I'm saying is if the Justice Department wants to help Chicago lower the crime rate, why not? And plus, this is a law. It's been on the law. It's been on the books for a long time. That if you're in this country illegally, you can be deported. And Rahm Emanuel wants to protect them. And he doesn't know what he's protecting. He could be protecting criminals. A lot of these immigrants come from other countries. They're not. Yeah, I would say that probably the vast majority of them coming to look for jobs or better life. But you got a few that might just want to be coming just to, you know, start some stuff, some crime or something. You know, I think they may have a point. And Rahm Emanuel, I have nothing against immigrants or anybody, but Rahm Emanuel acts as if he loves these people. And they're illegal. He actually, I mean, a couple of years ago, he had a lot of them in his house over for dinner. You know, I mean, he acts like he loves these immigrants, these illegals, and he's going to protect them with all of his fiber. But he can only do so much because, you know, if Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump wants to stop funding to these. To these sanctuary cities. I don't know why they call them sanctuary cities. Mayor Rahm Emanuel saying they're not sanctuary cities, that they're welcoming homes or something. I don't know. But you know, I'm not a racist. I'm not against immigrants or illegal. But, you know, when you have a crime spike in Chicago like Chicago has, and they are making some sense here, okay? I mean, we have the highest crime in the city of Chicago. We have the highest crime in the nation. And Rahm Emanuel and Superintendent of Police Eddie Johnson, they don't want to seem to do anything about it. They want to lower crime, then get the criminals out of Chicago. I'm not saying get the decent immigrants, get the law-abiding illegals out. I'm saying get the criminals out. What's wrong with that? We have crime up our asses in the city of Chicago, and yet we have two of the weakest people on it, and that is Rahm Emanuel and Superintendent of Police Eddie Johnson. These people are soft on crime. That's why crime is out of control. When you're soft on crime, when you don't have the guts or the ability face crime, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get more crime. It's ridiculous that the two of the largest cities in America, two of the largest, New York and Los Angeles, combined have less crime than the city of Chicago. I've been saying this for years, and it's still happening. Chicago still hasn't found a way to lower the crime rate. They have not found a way. And the Justice Department is saying, hey, we're going to step in and help you try to lower the crime, but we need access to those criminals. And what does Rahm Emanuel and Johnson say? No, no, you're not coming in here to raid Chicago and try to get illegals who might be criminals. This is crazy. And Rahm Emanuel is all over the television set right now trying to defend this. He's trying to defend this. These people are illegal. They may be criminals. Why can't you let the ICE agents in here to check this stuff out? Maybe you can lower some crime in the city of Chicago. I mean, their reasoning doesn't hold water. Some people may buy it, but this show does not. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm pissed off because the crime in the city of Chicago is just totally, totally out of control. And we've got two people who are just weak, weak, weak on crime. And this is and this is the reason why. And you see it right now that these people are weak because they don't want the FBI coming in and the ICE agents coming in to take immigrants out of the city of Chicago who may have or have the potential to commit more crime on the street. in the city of Chicago. It just doesn't make sense. It does not make sense. Rahm Emanuel, I mean, he's in front of the mic. He's talking, but what he says doesn't hold water. Okay? Eddie Johnson, the superintendent of police, he's in front of the mic. He's against this, and it doesn't hold water. I don't give a damn what these people say or how they're talking. You look at the sense of it, and it doesn't make sense. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here on Blog Talk Radio. It's just crazy that these people were not okay. They're complaining about, well, they're trying to threaten us with cutting off funding. Well, if you don't want funding to be cut off, have access to the folks who are criminals who have been causing mayhem or could cause more mayhem in the city of Chicago. Let them in. We have the most crime ever. And this just says one thing, folks. It says that we have some weak ass politicians who are weak on crime. And it's just totally
During an interview with Politico that was posted online this week, White House advisor, White House aide, whatever you want to call her, White House spokesperson maybe, Kellyanne Conway, took a shot at her critics once again. She told Politico that her critics were, quote, unhappy people with poison keyboards. I guess what she's trying to say is that they're a bunch of internet trolls going out there just saying mean old things to Kellyanne, who really isn't doing anything wrong. She doesn't understand why people are being so mean and horrible to her these days. Now, according to this interview that she gave with Politico, she had explained to her children that, yeah, look, mommy's going to be doing this thing. People are going to come at her. It's going to be, you know, pretty ugly sometimes, but just deal with it. To be honest, that is a very good thing to tell your children. Yeah, when you're in the public spotlight, there's going to be the naysayers. But if she took the time to explain that to her children, maybe she should have taken the time to explain to her children that, hey, listen, mommy's going to have to go on TV and lie through her teeth to the American public about things that never happened. She is the one who came up with the term alternative facts. She is the one who invented the Bowling Green massacre that never happened. So I understand nobody likes to get criticized. But Kellyanne, you're inviting this on yourself. The people who criticize you, who call you out, are not unhappy people. I can tell you firsthand, I'm a very happy person. I love my life right now. But I will continue to criticize you anytime you feel the need to go on television and lie to the American public on behalf of Donald Trump. Anytime you make up a fake terrorist attack, we're going to be there, as will everybody else online. And it's not because we just dislike you. It's because we don't want you to continue to dumb down the United States. This is our civic duty, to hold you and everyone else in your White House accountable. So you may think it's fine to go out there and give these interviews and attack the people who you claim are attacking you. But the truth is, all we're doing is trying to hold you accountable and, to be honest, try to undo some of the damage that you're inflicting on the public today. There are Republicans out there in the United States today who, honest to God, believe that the Bowling Green Massacre was a thing, that it happened, that it was carried out by Iraqi immigrants, and that U.S. citizens died as a result of it. And that's all on you, Kellyanne. You're poisoning the public discourse. It's not the people who dislike you.
All righty, I was talking earlier about depression and loneliness, and it is a problem, folks. I don't want anybody out there within the sound of my voice feeling depressed, feeling lonely, feeling out of it, feeling that you're worthless. It's not worth it, folks, because a lot of people are either lonely or depressed, and loneliness can kill you. Adopt a pet or something, you know, exercise more, feel good, drink more water. All of these things can make you smile, get you to smile, you know, I mean, because you're feeling good, your metabolism and everything is just working all right, working well, and everything's fine. You know, but being lonely is not it. I mean, being by yourself all the time, and you, there are actually people who don't want friends, people who don't want companionship, people who will fight if you try to come into their space, kind of speak. But you know, it is what it is. Loneliness can kill. Loneliness brings on depression. I mean, even the area that I'm living in right now, I mean, there's high risers all around this place. And majority of people living in those high risers are young women, period. And they're lonely. You got men living by themselves, women living by themselves. And a lot, just because a person is by themselves, it doesn't mean that they're lonely. I mean, you can be alone in a crowd and not be lonely. I guess there's a that. I mean, just because you're alone all the time and you're alone, it doesn't mean you're lonely. But that isn't the way it's going to look to somebody else who is watching you. Denver, you got to get yourself together before you do that. All right. Getting back. Okay. All right. Yeah, a lot of people are lonely and a lot of people like it. Denver, don't touch it. Get it out of there. I'm listening. All right. I'm talking to my son, folks. Let me take a break here because I think, okay, what can we do? We have a break. All right. We'll be right back with this.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
You've got a lot of nerve. Come in here. We'll be right back. Okay. Welcome back to the George Wilder Show. That's funny. I don't know. Every time I hear that, I laugh too. Yeah, well. Yeah. All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. A little, sometimes you have to laugh, folks. Sometimes you have to laugh. You have to smile. I mean, the world is full of its own troubles. You've got your troubles. I've got mine. And sometimes it's such a great thing to laugh and to laugh at some things. Even a lot of things that are going on in the world is not funny, but you have to try to stay sane. You know what I'm saying? You got to try to stay sane. And today we're talking about loneliness and depression, Wilder Jr. Show, because it's an epidemic. It is an epidemic. Yes, it is. 7:21 in Chicago, Central Standard Time. If you're calling in, make sure you realize that, because I've had so many people call in. And, well, George, we try to get you, but you were off the air. And I'm saying, if I have a different time zone than what you have, then if you call in at 6:30 and I'm off at 7:30, because it's 6:30 in your hometown and here it's 7:30. You really have to pay attention to the time zone. I've had guests, same thing with guests. They're calling to promote their book. And I'm thinking that these people have thrown the show off. They just blew me off, kind of. But they call in. I had a guest call in last week. The moment the show was over. Obviously, he was supposed to call in at 6:30, but he called in at Chicago time, which was 7:30. And at 7:30, the show ends at 7:30. It's from 6 to 7:30. So I can say the same thing for guests, future guests to be on the show. Make sure that you pay attention to the time zones in your state and in the state where this radio show is broadcasting. You know, so because it can be kind of confusing. But if you call and say, "Wow, George, I tried to call into your show, but you were off. George, I tried to call into your show, but you were not on." It's because of you didn't check out the time zones. OK, you have to check out the time zones. And because basically this show is on every 4 days a week from 6 o'clock to 6:30 to 7:30. You got me screwed up now. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday. Okay. So 347-857-1762. Make sure you watch the time zones and watch the time, because it's 7:24 in the city of Chicago right now. It could be 6:24 or 8:24, wherever you are. So you really have to watch those time zones. And a lot of people don't. But, you know, if you're supposed to be on the show and you have an excuse, "Well, George, I couldn't get in." "Oh, George, you weren't off because it's," you know, we can always reschedule. It's no problem. But, we all have to pay attention to time zones. You know, because sometimes I may have to call a guest in New York, or I have to call a guest in Los Angeles or Montana or South Carolina, wherever. And I have to kind of watch out for the time zones also. Okay, it is 7:25. We got about 5 minutes left into the show. And folks, it's been fun. It's been great. It's been beautiful. We will be back for the remaining of the week. We have guests throughout the week, you know, whether they show up or not, we just have to take that chance. Anyway, it's been great. It's been beautiful. We got about 5 more minutes left into the show. What can we say about 5 more minutes left into the show? Okay, let's do a little bit more about loneliness and depression. Depression, as we all know, depression is a disease. I mean, they have medication that they can give you for a depression. And depression comes with feeling worthlessness. And I've talked about that strongly on this episode earlier on the show. Okay, it is a killer too. You know, depression and loneliness, and no one should be lonely. No one. There are so many people out here walking dogs, and a lot of these people adopted these dogs from pet shelters, dogs that were threw away, maimed, abused. They go to a shelter and they adopt a dog. And that adopting a pet, as I've said, can take away loneliness. There's somebody there. There's somebody with a beating heart right there. There's somebody there that's going to love you. Somebody you're going to have to take out to use the bathroom. But anyway, it's all fun and it's all for your health. And that's one of the things what I'm talking about is trying to stop you from feeling lonely and trying to stop the depression that may set in later. Because these two things are deadly, folks. These two things are deadly. And the George Wilder Jr. Show is all about making the world a better place.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help us all. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw.
Everybody for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Have a great day. I hope you join me tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody. Okay. Now you can take it out. Now you can take it out. Denver, I know you don't care. So.